Shattering Myths, the program that is devoted to providing reinforcement for those who have come to recognize that all of the world's religious, political, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that these human institutions are not worth your loyalty, worth your support, and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you would like to participate at any time over the next 3 hours in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. The Kenyan Parliament has backed a new, what is called, controversial bill. It is aimed at enhancing the authorities' capacity to deal with terrorism and security issues. In Kenya, they have been assaulted on two fronts, both by Muslims. The Somalian terrorist organization, Islamic terrorist organization, the LADS, Shabab, has been attacking in Kenya and has been ruthless. Their most vicious attack was the shopping mall where they killed over 100 people. And then the mosques within Kenya have been equipping Muslims in those mosques with weapons and have been indoctrinating them with fundamentalist Islam so that they are attacking from within. And so Kenya is experiencing an unparalleled level of chaos from Muslims. And they recently passed laws that reduce the rights of Muslims and provide more opportunities for law enforcement to curtail their terrorist schemes. So when you read that giving the authorities a greater capacity to deal with terrorism, which you should read is a greater capacity to deal with the religion of Islam, they are joining Russia in this regard. Members of the parliament engaged in a heated debate with opposition saying that the law would infringe on human rights. Now, it doesn't infringe on human rights because Muslims are inhuman. Now, is that to say that every Muslim is inhuman? No, only the good ones are. You can be a good person so long as you're a really rotten Muslim. But if you're a good Muslim, if you follow Muhammad's example, if you do what your God orders you to do in the Quran, then you become inhuman. So there is no human rights being violated because Islam is wholly opposed to all human rights. Free expression, free will, free speech, even to life itself. They say human rights groups have said that they will stage protests if the bill is not amended to be less draconian. Well, there are some aspects of the bill that I would have targeted directly at Islam and not at society as a whole. I would have done what the Russian courts did and specifically target Islam. Islam is the menace. Islam is responsible for all of the terrorist attacks in Kenya. They're responsible for 99.9% of terrorist attacks worldwide. Somali militant groups, this article says, the Al-Shabaab group, the LADS, has attacked Kenya several times recently. Several times. There have been several massive attacks, but the attacks are almost constant. Quote, no freedoms are being curtailed unless you are a terrorist yourself, said the prime minister in a speech. Yeah, the fact is, no one can really be a terrorist. One can deploy terrorist tactics, but this idea of identifying people as terrorists destroys our ability to have a rational discussion on cause and consequence. No part of our constitution is being violated. Well, if that's the case, then you have a pretty rotten constitution. The BBC's correspondent in Nairobi said there were calls on both sides of parliament for some of the bill's controversial elements to be amended. These included the right for authorities to detain terror suspects for up to 1 year. This is something that exists in the United States. It is absolutely wrong. It is unconstitutional in the United States. But the United States has decided that there are people called terrorists, which is a myth, and that if somebody is suspected of terrorism, which they really don't define, then they can be incarcerated for a year or more without charges, without a court appearance, without the opportunity for bail, without even the opportunity for a lawyer. It is a total suspension of our constitution, what is now being done in Kenya. The second is the handing of powers to intelligence agencies to tap communications without court consent. This is also happening in America. Kenya is following the lead of America in this regard. That's not good. So these measures, while necessary in the sense of if you isolated the wiretaps, if you isolated those detained to Muslims, if you declared Islam illegal based upon its core values, based upon its propensity to inspire terrorism, rape, kidnapping, the slave trade, pedophilia, and mass murder, as well as torture. If you isolated Islam as criminal, then this would be wholly appropriate. And it is important, though, to recognize the United States has violated its constitution and been doing this now for better part of a decade. And the requirement for journalists to obtain police permission before investigating or publishing stories on domestic terrorism. Now, that's a horrible idea. Now, I'm going to tell you that there aren't five people in the whole of Kenya that are honest journalists. There aren't five honest journalists in America. The ability of a journalist to be discriminating, the ability of a journalist to exercise good judgment, the willingness of a journalist to actually investigate the root cause of terrorism, the willingness of a journalist to hold Islamic groups accountable, the unwillingness of journalists to seek the common denominator between all of the hellish events that are happening around the world, and recognizing that it is Islam, and then studying Islam's original scriptures, coming to know its founder, Muhammad, based on the Quran and Hadith, is something that they're unwilling or unable to do, and I suspect wholly unwilling, because to do so would cost them their jobs. That's how jaundiced society has become. The bill will be passed on to a parliamentary committee for amendment before being sent to the president to be signed into law. They have a serious problem. But the way to resolve the problem is honest dialogue. To explain what the Hadith and Quran say that Muslims must do to remain Muslims. To expose and condemn the life of Muhammad, which the Quran says his example must be followed. To consider the Hadith, which is the sole source of Muhammad's orders, and come to understand that the Quran orders Muslims to follow his commands. To understand what those are, and based upon a thorough examination and presentation of that information, to rightfully, honestly, compassionately, appropriately, legally, justly, morally, rationally declare Islam a criminal enterprise, which is what it's been for its entire existence, and declare it illegal, and then impose these restrictions on that criminal enterprise. The Senate's report on the CIA is interesting in that it only brushes ever so lightly against the media pushback against the G-men, the FBI. You see, the CIA, during this whole episode, went to war, a strategic battle against the FBI. And it's a really interesting story. I'm going to try to provide some of the highlights of this because, you know, the whole purpose of the Homeland Security Act and to create the Department of Homeland Security, you know, America's Gestapo, was so that the FBI and CIA would work together. Now, I think that's a horrible idea. The larger the institution, the more corrupt it becomes. The larger the human institution, the less efficient it becomes. The larger the human institution, the less likely it is to perform properly. So by putting institutions together, firearms, tobacco and alcohol, customs, the FBI, the CIA, the Secret Service, by putting these organizations together, the NSA and, to a large degree, the U.S. military, what we created was a monster. But it's interesting that the goal was to have them work together, and that didn't even happen. The CIA went to war against the FBI over who would get credit for and whose tactics would be deployed when interrogating Muslims. You see, the New York Times reporter, David Johnson, had called, this is this article on this, and it's really interesting. This goes back to September of 2006. It begins by saying that the alarm bells went off at the CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, when top officials picked up fresh intelligence of an imminent new threat. Now, the threat wasn't coming from, this says, Al-Qaeda, although Al-Qaeda was never the threat, but instead from a formidable domestic adversary, the FBI. The New York Times reporter David Johnson had called the CIA office, public affairs, that day about an upcoming story he was working on about the interrogation of Abu Zubaydah, one of the agency's prized high-value detainees. Johnson's question suggested that he was going to credit FBI agents for using traditional and entirely legal rapport-building techniques for ferreting out information. That's not what the CIA wanted. So the FBI wanted to use the most effective technique in eliciting information to build rapport with the detainee. You know, first of all, everybody that you've got here, you know, you have not indicted them. You've not arraigned them. You've not tried them. You've not convicted them. And it can't even be referred to as a prisoner of war because you haven't declared war on Islam and their only allegiance is to Islam. You haven't declared war on anybody, actually. So there's no declaration of war. They can't be prisoners of war. And there's been no due process at all. You've simply captured them, which is akin to kidnapping them, and now want to interrogate them. So the FBI said that the most effective means is to build rapport. You know, when you, somebody already hates you, and you come off aggressively, hostily, you torture them, their hatred is going to grow. And in the case of these individuals, none of them knew anything about 9/11 before it occurred. They weren't part of the planning of it. They didn't conceive it. They didn't implement it. What are they going to tell you? Nothing. Got nothing. So, you know, if you just wanted to know, let's say that you decided that bin Laden is the ultimate bad guy, and your goal was to get him, well, you know, this stuff happened back in 2007. You can get him for many, many years thereafter, and there's no direct link between any of this and getting him, and getting him was irrelevant. It was absolutely irrelevant. You know, this notion that we got him, isn't that great? No. How many American lives were sacrificed? You know, Islam screaming and Muslims screaming, Allahu Akbar, murdered 3,000 Americans on 9/11. And America then sacrificed another 10,000 Americans in pursuit of the of bin Laden. Why would you sacrifice 10,000 lives to avenge the death of 3,000? How is that moral? How is that appropriate? How is that rational? But that's what we did. We not only sacrificed the lives of 10,000 Americans to avenge the death of 3,000, but we, our invasion broke two countries, less than vastly worse than they previously were, started many civil wars, and has left a million people dead. All while we bankrupt the nation. Unbelievably stupid. And then you have the prime cheerleader for it. Dick, I'm full of crap Cheney. Saying it worked. Yeah, we bankrupt America. We sacrificed needlessly, wastefully, the lives of 10,000 Americans, all making a bad situation worse. We left another million people dead between Iraq and Syria. It's pathetic. And so here is the FBI saying, all right, we capture this guy, and we don't want to indict him. We don't want to try him. We can't do any of those things because he's going to use Islam as a defense, and that's the last thing we want to have to deal with. So we're not going to do those things. So we want information. We want to know what he has. So the CIA wants to make him hate us all the more, and the FBI says, let's try to build some rapport with the guy. Let's cut him a deal. Let's rapport build as the best technique for ferreting out information. And the FBI the CIA was brass senior leaders were equally enthusiastic for rough tactics, because that's what the CIA does around the world. They use rough tactics. They're the ultimate bull in the china shop. The CIA brass was livid that the FBI wanted to interrogate this man. Bull Pucky. Mark Mansfield, director of the CIA Public Affairs, wrote in an email to senior officials alerting them to Johnson's upcoming story, emphasizing that we need to push back against the FBI. We need to push back against the media. We need to win this war against the CIA, against the media. The subject line on Mansfield's email made it clear that urgent action was required. We can't let this go unchallenged, he wrote. Who was the enemy? The FBI. Who was the enemy? The media. Tells you a lot about the mindset, the moral decay, the depravity, the ego of the CIA, the CIA story, and their battle with the FBI, and the arrogance and the depravity of the CIA in this regard. And I do want to mention something. I've watched it twice now, and I keep on thinking I'm going to share this information with our listeners. It's called Dinosaur 13. It is a CNN documentary. It is breathtaking. And it's absolutely breathtaking. It is the story of some paleontologists who discover the most amazing dinosaur fossil ever found. And it's found in land that is partly managed by the United States. And these individuals, their devotion, their love of paleontology, and their desire to allow people to share in the discovery. And then what the United States Justice Department does, how the United States Justice Department deploys not only the FBI, but also deploys the National Guard, the military. And how the U.S. government lies and seizes this most amazing fossil. and the depravity of federal judges, of the IRS, of politicians in general, and how this nation has lost its way. Unfortunately, there is another despicable character in this story. It happens to be an Indian rancher. But the story is just heartbreaking. But it is so important to watch when you see just how despicable America has become, and particularly this integration I've been warning Americans about for the last 3 years, of the integration between politicians, the military, the Justice Department, and the federal policing agencies like the FBI, and how they all came down on really some extraordinary individuals. One of the individuals you'll find out in this documentary, and I don't want to spoil it for you, but I think it's important that you know that for not properly completing a form on traveler's checks, which, you know, not many traveler's checks today because credit cards are ubiquitous, but back in the day when we traveled with traveler's checks. And evidently there's some obscure form that the United States government, Customs, wants you to fill out with the traveler's checks. And my guess is that all the travels I've been on around the world, I've never filled one out. And this guy was sent away for 2 years to a supermax prison. That's how mad the government was at him for trying to do the right thing. It's an amazing story. I strongly encourage you to watch, even if you don't have any interest in dinosaurs, although the dinosaur story is marvelous. If you don't have any interest in paleontology, although that story is educational, you need to watch it just to understand the malfeasance of the U.S. government and its ability to do what it should not be able to do, to have the FBI, Justice Department, and military all engage in a political act against individuals without an indictment, without due process, without any evidence, and then seizing people's assets. It's, as I say, it's an amazing story. Dinosaur 13, that's the 13th dinosaur fossil found of Tyrannosaurus rex. And it's a documentary presentation by CNN. Returning to this story, the Mansfield email cited in a brief passage buried in last week's Senate Intelligence Committee torture report offers a revealing glimpse into an intense year-long bureaucratic clash, an egotistical clash between the CIA and FBI. That is key to understanding the debate over the CIA's torture program. From the outset, the FBI agents and senior officials were appalled by the CIA's use of waterboarding, of forced nudity, of wall slamming, of rectal probing, and other brutal tactics revealed in the stunningly detailed report provided to the Senate. Quote, "I swear to God, I'm going to arrest these guys," said one of the FBI's lead agents. And he shouted to his boss at FBI headquarters over a secure telephone after a discovery of the agency's plans to shove Zubaydah into a coffin at a black site prison in Thailand. By the way, confining somebody into a coffin is torture. I'm claustrophobic. If you were to tie me down so that I couldn't move, if you were to put me in a coffin, I would rather die. That would be torture to me. Now, I don't know if it's torture to everyone. I would assume that it's torture to everyone. You know, the idea of being buried alive. You know, it may be the among the worst forms of torture. And this idea that the FBI would do this in Thailand, the CIA would do this in Thailand, so that they didn't, well, because it's an American agency, they're sworn to the Constitution, so they don't have the right to torture anyone anywhere. But the fact they did it in Thailand makes it an international crime, means that they're subject to international courts. And so everyone in the chain of command of the CIA and the Bush administration should be accountable internationally to this. But in Thailand is where they took this man. They had no connection of Thailand. They went to Thailand just to have it be secret. They went to Thailand so they wouldn't be accountable to the American media, so they wouldn't be accountable to Americans, so they wouldn't be accountable to the Constitution, so they wouldn't be accountable to anyone. Those protests were, to be sure, driven in part by bureaucratic pride and turf. The FBI was being mostly kept in the dark about what the CIA was up to. And that was the whole idea of homeland security, right? So much for that idea. And its agents were even denied access to the biggest detainee, the 9/11 architect, this says, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was not the 9/11 architect. That is a lie that has been repeated so often that it is it's now believed universally by Americans. The CIA knows that Sheikh Khalid Mohammed was not the architect. I know he was not the architect. You know he was not the architect. All of us know he was not the architect. And it's obvious, based upon what was made available to the CIA, to the FBI, to the media, that Ramzi Youssef is the architect of 9/11. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed simply shared what he had written. And he didn't even need to share it. It became a public domain. It's in the public domain. You can read Ramzi Youssef's creation of the 9/11 plot. In his own words. And so it was published. You don't even need a courier. And the most that can be said about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is that he was a courier of the information. Therefore, he knew of it in advance, but he didn't conceive the plot. That is absolutely a lie. And why would the government, why would the CIA lie to us about such a thing? To cover up their own malfeasance? To cover up their incompetence? To make it sound like, oh, we got him? When it's not true? Then Director Robert Mueller, upon learning about Sufin's reports from Thailand, instructed his agents not to participate in CIA interrogations, fearing they could be in jeopardy and be tainted if any of the detainees were ever to end up in a U.S. courtroom. The moment a kidnapped victim, the moment somebody that you kidnap, without indicting them, without providing them with legal representation, without laying out the charges before them, without giving them an opportunity to defend themselves. The moment that you interrogate them without the constitutional guarantees, you've lost the ability to try them in American court. You lost it. They're going to be exonerated. You cannot try them. The moment you deploy torture to elicit a confession, it's over. Rather than the individual being tried, it's going to be the torturers being tried. And so the FBI knew, part of the Justice Department, they knew, you can't do this. If you do this, you have no chance of getting a conviction. Why is it that Guantanamo just goes on and on and on, and they keep these people not as prisoners of war, but as detainees for year after year after year after year, because they can't charge them. Now they can't bring them to trial. It's not that, you know, they always use the excuse, well, we can't bring them to trial because the evidence that would be brought against them would reveal our sources. We don't have any sources. The reason they can't bring them to trial is because it would reveal the malfeasance of the CIA, because it would demonstrate that the real enemy of America is the CIA. That's why they can't bring them to trial. I'd always thought the reason they couldn't bring these guys to trial is that their defense would be Islam. They would declare they're good Muslims, acting in accordance with the Quran, that they would take the same approach that that Abrahman, Sheikh Abrahman, the blind sheikh from Cairo, who orchestrated the murder of Anwar Sadat. When charged, he simply said, "You can't convict me because my defense is the Quran. I'm doing what Muhammad and Allah instructed us to do." And my understanding had always been the reason that none of these detainees were ever tried, the reason they killed bin Laden as opposed to bringing him back for trial, was because their defense would be the Quran. Their defense would be the same defense that I learned in the fall of 2001 when I interviewed them. And America didn't want that known. Returning to the fight, the battle between the CIA and the FBI, the Bureau's dissents, this would be the FBI's, eventually found their way to sympathetic reporters, raising the first questions about the ethics and effectiveness of the CIA's methods. Now, understand that torture has never worked and will never work. Now, that doesn't mean that it hasn't been used and used to a great deal. You know, Japanese soldiers were prosecuted for torture, and one of the most egregious tortures that the Japanese were prosecuted for was waterboarding. The American military and the German military and the Russian military all engaged in torture. Nothing's ever learned that is useful in torture. Ever. There's no way to verify what the person says. There's no reason for the person to spew up information. They don't. They will say anything just to ease the pain, and they'll make up the stories. And most people become delusional under those circumstances. Torture never works. But beyond the fact that torture doesn't work, even if it was the most effective way to get information, it would never be justified. It's never appropriate. Ever. Now, you might say that there are circumstances where you could see how torture would at least be a fair consequence for what somebody else has done. And if somebody has killed someone or killed a bunch of people, then you know that direct consequence would be just to kill them. If someone has, and there have been people who found pleasure in inflicting pain on others and tortured others for long periods of time, then such an individual would deserve to be tortured. Now, the problem there is that the person implementing the torture as a just consequence for what the person has done is going to be destroyed by the act. Everyone in the CIA that did this was destroyed. Even those, the brass that's now defending it and the Dick Cheneys of the world that are defending it, they're all destroyed. They lost the ability to be reasonable, to be rational, to be compassionate, to be moral. They lost their souls, all of them. But in a case of wartime, there is never a justification for it, ever. And the only place where you could say, all right, I can see why torture might be fair, might be appropriate, is if the person that you are dealing with deliberately, knowingly, systematically tortured others. Dick Cheney. They would fall into that category. But no one associated with 9/11 falls into that category. No one. It is wholly inappropriate. Even if it would work, which it didn't. And it won't. Now, this article continues to say, and the story has in turn prompted the CIA to double down in the Washington spin wars. Yeah, you see, the CIA not only spins information internationally, plays in deceit. I mean, that's the whole concept of the CIA is to deceive. You know, it's to, for example, to spin up a rebellion in Kiev that overthrows the popularly elected government. Well, we claim, we spin in the world's media that these are freedom fighters and that they are representing the majority and that the government was not properly elected and that this now is the group representing the people, when the opposite is true. But the CIA spins. That's what it does. And so they decided that they would engage in a spin war against the FBI, feeding sanitized accounts of the interrogation program to news media that, as the Senate report suggests, were very misleading. In fact, this article says were at best highly misleading. They lied. They lied to the U.S. media. We either get out and sell or we get hammered. This is a quote, which has implications beyond the media, wrote Philip Mudd, then deputy director of the CIA's National Counterterrorism Center. He wrote this on April 13th of 2005 in an email about the need for the agency to take a more aggressive effort to shape views and to shape stories about the program and to mold public opinion. America, you'd not only be played for a fool. That part of it worked. A very significant number of Americans agree with what they did.